Now that we have a quorum, I call this meeting of Customer Service and Operations to order. Chair Kathy Hudgens will not be here today, so I will be chairing this meeting. The first item is approval of the agenda. Can I have a motion to approve the agenda? Second. It's moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye. Aye. It's approved. Next is the approval of the minutes from March 12th. Can I have a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
All right, moved. Can I have a second?
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded. All those in favor of approving the minutes, please say aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay, minutes are approved. Before we begin with the remaining items on the agenda, I'd like to recognize Rob Troop for a special announcement.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And what I'd like to say is that beginning April 13th, we will begin full ATO on the red line for our eight-car trains. It obviously represents a significant milestone, a lot of hard work that has preceded that, and the change out of the Generation 2 track circuits. Our six-car trains will follow up shortly. We are doing some software changes on those so that we can have precision station stop on those cars. So we are very pleased to announce that beginning April 13th, we will be going to full ATO with our eight-car trains on the red line.
Well, thank you very much. That's very good news for folks on the red line. Thank you. We have one action item on this morning's agenda and two informational items. The first item, which is the action item, is to approve the Loudoun County station names for Phase 2 of the Dulles Rail Project. Barbara Richardson and Jennifer Allison will provide us with a quick overview of the station naming policy and the partnership with Loudoun County used to develop the proposed names.
Good afternoon, everyone. I know I just got a look from Mr. Giancolos. It seemed to say, what are you doing over there? So this is a little different vantage point for Jennifer and I. But it is the conclusion of work that started 4 years ago. When actually I was in Lynn's position and Jennifer was also on the communications marketing side. And you'll recall that 4 years ago we had a significant amount of work and outreach that was done around the naming of the Silver Line, also how to incorporate the Silver Line in the iconic map. And from that, then, questions came about and customers had comments on the station naming policy. As they went and they reviewed the map and they looked at different options and they were providing advice and input on that, then we then, and the board then, went through the review process to review the map. So today, and the station name, so today I'm here to talk about that historical process and just a little bit of refresher reminder on the policy that we had. And then Jennifer, most recently, has been working with Loudoun County and can talk about the research on that. But first of all, we were fortunate enough at that time, you'll recall, that we were able to retain Lance Wyman, who was the original map designer. And that was very helpful to us in all of the outreach that we did. And from that, I just want to we're very proud of the work that was done, a lot of customer input, a lot of focus groups, a lot of survey work. We also did, and we were here before this group with videos of the customers speaking from the focus groups. We enlisted community groups and also advocate groups. For instance, Greater Washington participated in it and helped facilitate and move the whole process along. And from all of that work, just some of the highlights that we learned along the way is that first, the customers were supportive and continued to stand by what the original policy, which dated all the way back to the general manager, the original general manager, Jackson Graham, which was that the primary purpose of station names is to identify the station locations by geographic features or centers of activity and to help people navigate within the system to get to where they need to go. Over and over, we heard the importance of brevity. And the desire to have station names with one or two names or one or two words associated with it. And some of the more historic names were pointed to as really good examples. Those were the names that stuck with people. But that also the brevity issue was really important, too, as we talked further in the conversation, because of the map and the ability to quickly see it. Customers really wanted to declutter that map so that they were able to quickly see where they were going. Onboard and station announcements, you'll recall we did a lot of work around that and how important that was for those announcements to be heard. And then there were ADA considerations that we looked at with the in-station signage and also related to those new 7K trains, and we talked some a bit about that. Customers noted that the landmarks were helpful in navigating, and then there was quite a bit of discussion about the proximity of the landmarks to the actual station, and what was decided at that point was it needed to be walkable or about a half a mile. So if you wanted to have a landmark within a name, that was key. And then there was conversation around those longer station names, and they were not, they just had questions about why it was or how we got to that point that the station name got to be so long when the policy was such. The board at that time reaffirmed the policy, but we did give some specifics to the following. Cost estimates for changes. There was previously not in the policy a discussion about if a jurisdiction comes forward with the change that they needed to make a commitment that they were the ones that would take care of the cost, anything above and beyond that we were planning to do with a major change underway. That we called out very specifically that we wanted customer research done, regional customer research done, and that we created a primary-secondary name approach to help the readability of some of those longer names and you approved grandfathering. And also, you reinforced the use that landmarks did need to be within a half a mile. We'll go to the next slide. So you maintain the current policy, stay to keep the names brief, and I'll just remind you there were character limits, that we have 19 characters for stations overall, and that included spaces. There are 13 characters for transfer stations, also landmarks within a half a mile, and a process. And the process for station names, just briefly, is that the jurisdictions submit to the board a request for a station name change or a new station name, but it has to include community involvement, a community to indicate acceptability in their respective community. And it also has to come with the commitment that if there are any added costs beyond what the authority is already planning to spend, that they would be responsible for that. There could be some other entity paying for that, but that they had to take responsibility for that. Then the suggestion would come back here, and we would then conduct customer research for the region. So how did that name and what did customers regionally think of that name? And then the names are brought forth to the board for approval. So that then, next slide, leads us to the Silver Line names. And Jennifer, you want to talk about the work done there?
Sure. Next slide, please. Great, thank you. I'd first like to start by saying that our work with Loudoun County was a very collaborative process. Early last year, they reached out to us, really wanting to get a good understanding of the policy because they understood a lot of work went into it, a lot of customer feedback. About station names, so they really had an interest in understanding the board's policy, and they also wanted a good understanding of what other jurisdictions had done and when were they successful, and really tried to model those efforts. And in dealing with the policy, they really liked the fact that it had a strong community engagement foundation. And so they understood that, you know, customer feedback is important and that, you know, it's a regional system. So they understood it's not only important for Loudoun County residents, but also our regional customers as well. So early last year, Loudoun County officials with the assistance of WMATA and working with the policy, developed a set of names for community outreach. They conducted several public engagement meetings to get feedback on the set of names that they have proposed. They also conducted an online survey, mainly of their residents, about 2,200 participants or 2,500 participants. And so from there, from that informed community engagement as a requirement of our policy, they forwarded to us a set of names. And the four they proposed, three for were for the Route 606 station. Those were Broad Run, Loudoun East, and Loudoun Gateway. The fourth was for the Route 772 station, which was Ashburn. And so then Metro undertook some customer research to test those names within our area. So you go to the next slide. And you can see here, of the three names tested, for Route 606, Broad Run was the least preferred in terms of likability as well as on the naming attributes that are outlined in our policy. Loudoun Gateway and Loudoun East were pretty neck and neck. They had remarkably similar ratings. And in terms of likability, Loudoun East was just slightly more preferable to the customers, but not much more so than Loudoun Gateway. Ashburn was the only name submitted for our testing because it was overwhelmingly popular in the Loudoun work. And so we just wanted to sort of confirm and verify that that was indeed the direction and our customers could validate that as well. As you can see here, it was had a really high rating of 73% in terms of likability, and it also rated fairly well in all the other policy attributes for station names. So next slide, please. So given the extremely collaborative process and the fact that the board's policy was followed, had a really good model based on some of the other jurisdictional work, we'd like to recommend that the board approve Loudoun Gateway and Ashburn as the two station names for 606 and 772 as requested by the Loudoun County Board of Supervisors. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any comments or questions from the committee? Go ahead.
Does the committee or the board always accept the recommendation that comes from the local jurisdiction that makes the recommendation?
No. No. In fact, the first round of the Fairfax names that were submitted, we did more consumer research, and then Fairfax went back and then came back with some different names. So, no, it's not
so for
always.
For the Tysons.
But we try to make it as collaborative as we can. Yeah.
Okay. I know when I first read it, I thought, well, gee, what if you're coming from Loudoun into D.C.? You're no longer at the gateway. You're leaving. That was just a personal thought. But does anyone else name it for the whole county? And I would think most of our stations are pretty specific to a very narrow geographic description as compared to the entire county. I don't think there's a Montgomery or a Fairfax or a Prince George's County, and where in Loudoun are you? So that was my reaction when I first read it. So,
well, that is true, and sometimes the names are selected to start to create a sense of place as well. No, there's not a Montgomery County, although we have several stations.
We have
Rockville. I'm not Comic-Con. And, I think sometimes the best ones, or at least we heard in the research, the best ones are those like Ashburn or very specific like Tacoma or,
It's a neighborhood.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair? I just wondered, I know we had the policy that if you want a change, you either pay for it or you pick it up when something else is being done. I just wonder, are there any other pending requests for change that we know of?
We've not received any official requests in terms of the community input and piece. I think there's one for Prince George's Community College that's being discussed. We've had a lot of correspondence, but I'm not sure the community engagement piece hasn't started yet, that sort of thing. So we're still waiting. That's the only one that we know of.
Can I ask quickly a follow-up? If they wanted to make that change in Prince George's to include Prince George's Community College, I understand the problems with the policy. When would that need to happen in order to get involved in this?
This summer. Okay. We have to have the names this summer.
in order to go through the whole design process, sign fabrication, installation.
Okay. Thank you. That's helpful. Mr. Giancola?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that while there may not be counties noted, there certainly are cities with, you know, like Vienna and such. So there is some identity to those locations. And I know that there was quite a bit of discussion at the time when we were talking about the NOMA station. And then, of course, you have all the subtitles. In other words, you have the name of the station, then you have the little sub-names sometimes. So sometimes that could be adjusted that way. But I just wanted to add that to the discussion.
Is there anything else? Would someone like to move the resolution?
So
okay. Would someone like to second? Okay. Resolution has been moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Resolution passes. And thank you all for the work that you've done on this. The next item is an update on some of the actions Metro has taken as part of its customer care program, with a focus today on the ways Metro is providing its employees with tools they need to deliver excellent customer service. And I want to recognize before we begin the point that Board Member Hampshire Cowan made at the previous meeting, where she talked about the necessity, and when we're making changes in an organization, the necessity for collaborating and partnering with employees. And I recognize her wisdom because of her background in that, and I appreciate that she said that, and I think that serves as an excellent lead-in to this.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that is indeed what our focus has been in the Customer Care Committee as we work cross-functionally across the organization to try to improve customer service. Very quickly, it became apparent that the workforce was critical to delivering better service. And as we work across many issues, training, safety, service issues, it's been Barbara Moulton, our Director of Customer Care, who's been out in the field with the frontline employees, both on the bus and the rail side, with our bus and rail supervision, wrestling with these issues. And so I've asked Barbara today, and I reintroduce her to the committee, to present the update of the working group so that should you have any questions about what employees are really struggling with in these areas, Barbara can give you a firsthand account.
Thank you, Lynn. I thought it might be helpful to reiterate the purpose of the customer care program because we have some new board members. At its very core, the customer care program's goal is to infuse customers' perspective at every decision point in the organization. By doing this, we can improve customer satisfaction and reach and sustain a satisfaction performance goal of 84%, which supports the board's goal and Metro's business plan. We've strategically begun to employ best practices from companies like Southwest Airlines, UPS, and even Zappos, one of my favorite. And that means to take care of the internal customer first, the employees. So the updates you hear today will be relative to employees, their concerns, and barriers to them providing excellent customer service. Research suggests that most organizations that provide outstanding customer service create a culture that treats their employees like their number one customer. This year, the Customer Care Committee, which is made up of a cross-section of employees, positions, and departments within Metro, used two divisions, one bus and one rail, as laboratories to assess and develop actions prior to rolling them out system-wide. Our needs assessment found the top three frontline issues are, number one, safety. Employees are concerned about being assaulted on the job. Two, restroom cleanliness was a major concern. It was viewed as an internal customer service issue for them. And three, communications was vitally important to them also. So we've begun to address each issue. With regard to employee safety, we found that the root cause of employee and customer disputes was fare collection. Working collaboratively with MTPD and operations, we've developed a 90-day pilot program that will start at the end of this month. Targeted rail and bus lines will see additional police presence as well as community outreach and messaging. The success of this effort will be measured by a decline in fare evasion, employee assaults, and feedback. This program was discussed in detail during the Safety Security Committee meeting last month, and both committees will be updated in the fall regarding the results of the pilot and the next steps. Issue number two was employee restroom conditions. They were seen as symbolic of internal customer service. The systematic upgrade of employee restrooms, many of which have the original fixtures 36 to 40 years ago, is an ongoing effort. As you can see from the pictures, the top visual may suggest neglect, whereas the newly renovated restroom suggests a higher level of customer care, which is important for employees to experience routinely. Currently, 16 facilities have been renovated, and additional four are planned for 2016. Moving forward, employee restroom conditions will continue to be monitored and for future strategic build-out. And finally, on the communications front, we learned through our own needs assessment, as well as through the recent employee survey, that employees want and need feedback. And that's a good thing. They're engaged. Specifically, they wanted the results of the 2014 survey and subsequent action plans to be shared at their level. Again, we work collaboratively with HR and operations to develop a robust communication plan, which kicked off last month. Every employee received a letter at home that shared high-level findings and outlined our commitment to getting their area-specific results directly to them. The complete survey results have been put on our intranet, and customized presentations are going on as we speak to all divisions about their specific areas. And employees are being encouraged to share their ideas freely and often about improvements. In the next few months, specific action plans will be developed and shared as well. The next steps is for us to share the results of the bus operator focus groups that are being conducted this month. You might remember that the same qualitative discussions were held with the frontline station managers last year. It was through those discussions that we learned that it would be helpful for station managers to have a tool that showed work order status, repair status, of fare gates and vendors. They said it would help them to inform customers and provide better customer service. Our next update will include the status of that tool for the station managers. And finally, we'll be updating you on the status of the fare enforcement pilot program. That's it.
Okay, thank you. I believe Mr. Giancola has a question.
Yeah, thank you for your report. I'm really delighted to see the effort being put on the restroom upgrades. And I'm just kind of curious, how many restrooms are we talking about total that still have to be done?
We're about two-thirds way from the renovations. Each facility has multiple restrooms. We're about two-thirds the way complete.
Now, are some of these employee restrooms in areas where there's fewer, are they also being used for the general public in emergencies?
Yes.
So that even makes it even more important that our general public sees an improved facility as well. So I thought that was the case, because I know in Tacoma there's only really one facility there. So, all right, thank you.
Are there other questions?
Yeah, just following up on the restroom question. How many restrooms are there system-wide, or are these 16 simply the ones in the two pilot projects, or is that dealing with the entire system?
No, that's throughout the system.
Throughout the system?
Yeah, the exact number I don't have for you today.
Any other questions from the committee?
One other
We can get back to you with the exact number.
Yeah,
would that be helpful?
That. Yeah.
Sure.
I did have a chance to look at the results of the employee survey that was sent out to us. Very interesting. Mixed results, some things I think we're doing very well on, some others that are clearly areas where we can improve. But I suggest that we take a good look at that, come back with what steps we need to be taking in the areas of improvement being needed.
I thank you for that suggestion. That was another suggestion I was going to make. We did get the memo, but I wonder if you're planning sort of a presentation on the survey results at some point in the future to the committee, combined with
as Mr. Downey suggested, the things that we're going to be doing to follow up on some of the areas of concern.
We can surely do that, and we'll work with the board corporate secretary to be on the agenda for that.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any other questions, comments? The next item is an update on the new electronic payment program from the program's director, Tom Randall. We are now in the pilot program phase, which will continue through June, and the phase offers customers new and more convenient ways to pay their metro fares. Go ahead.
Good morning. Hello. Is it on? Okay.
It's your initiation. You have to figure out how to make the microphones work.
Now we're good. Good. Just on the next slide, I'll start right off with some highlights or the key items here. Pilot began slightly later than anticipated due to some delayed software upgrades and other deliverables. The rail and bus devices are installed and operating. Parking systems are still delayed due to incomplete software. The current provider of parking software required an upgrade to support the new requirements and has not delivered the functioning system yet. We're continuing to work hard on that. The functionality is improving, but it's not ready yet. And also, the participants, well, 3,000 participants registered via our website or enrolled in the program. Only about 400 have activated their accounts so far. Lack of smart benefits integration was one of the reasons cited for the lack of participation, as well as some change in travel patterns. Those were the most frequent reasons cited for not participating at this time. So we've taken action to address this shortfall of pilot participants, as noted here. In addition to continuing to recruit by keeping our website open, we have significantly expanded the testing performed by project team members so we can thoroughly test the system as it would have been. Those customers participating in the pilot have provided generally very favorable comments on their experience. In fact, 94% of the enrollees and participants surveyed say they would recommend the program to others. The pilot phase measures, we are closely monitoring all the success measures and generally seeing good results. The system response time and system operations, the good results there are between a 99.5 and a 99.9% reliability factors. Those are currently being achieved. Transaction times have been meeting targets. Transaction time is the time between the card is read, the transaction goes back to our central system, is returned to the gate or the bus device, and signals a fare is good to go or declined. Systems and devices have been operating consistently without significant issues. We review this activity weekly. All the data is reviewed and items are investigated and a resolution determined whether it should be counted as an error. And as noted previously, NEP team members or the project team members are increasing the test transactions to exercise the system. Some of the next steps upcoming include expanding transaction volume, as I mentioned, and continuing to gather the customer feedback. While not a critical success factor to the pilot, the feedback from the customers will help us design the full deployment program. Also, in another fact from the most recent survey, over 80% say WMATA is moving in the right direction with this program. So that was good to hear. We continue to monitor the pilot phase activity and examine the results each week. And also, the equity analysis has begun. With the guidance of Equal Opportunity and the Planning Department, survey information, farebox transaction analysis, and other data are gathered and analyzed to understand customer preferences and habits and using cash on the bus. This effort will help us understand any impact the new system on cash customers, especially the unbanked, and identify mitigation actions needed. Cash will still be valid for fare and accepted on the bus. Results are expected in July from this process. We continue to work with the regional providers and support their understanding of the program specifics and requirements. Recently, we have been discussing ways to better coordinate the work necessary for their integration to the new system. We've discussed possible changes in the structure of the program, such as having WMATA assume a larger role for them with the integrator on behalf of the regional providers, and those discussions continue. Next phase planning is developed. This is important to next phase planning for the full deployment is ongoing, and this is an important communication aspect with the regional providers as well. We are also preparing an updated program assessment. This assessment will look back at the initial program goals, benefits, and financials with updates to the current state of understanding. Actual activities have happened over the past 4 years that can be reflected in the new program goals. The purpose is to provide a comprehensive look at the current state of the program, reflect on your earnings from the last 4 years, and look to see what the program is destined to achieve in the future. And this update is to be provided in June. As I said, we are working on developing more details to our time schedule, and we will provide that update. That work will be completed in May as well. This was the current schedule, which has not varied significantly since the start of the program. Thank you.
Any comments, questions from the committee? Let me go with Mr. Goldman first and then Mr. Yu.
Mr. Andrew, when you last briefed us, you and I had a colloquy about who was participating in the pilot. Let's continue that discussion now. Of the 3,000 people who originally signed up to participate in the pilot, how many of them were actually going to use a smartphone or a credit card with an embedded chip?
Madam Chair, Mr. Committee Member Goldman, we did not have any of those members that signed up from the general public committed to using a smartphone or a credit card at that time with a contactless chip. We had concerns about following up on transactions and relative privacy issues regarding those transactions. So those devices, that type of media has been tested by the program team and continues to.
All right, so let's focus on the 300 to 400 people who are active users.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're going to answer and tell me that none of them use their own smartphone or their own credit card with an embedded chip.
Madam Chair, Committee Member, yes, that's the case.
How did they participate in the program? What were they using?
Thank you. The program provides a fair media to each of those 3,000 participants so they can use this program. It's a card similar to the current Smart Trip card, but used just for the pilot gate. So we provide them fair media that's recorded in our system so they can use that.
So they were using a special card that was provided by WMATA or whoever the test entity is, rather than anything that they use on their own?
Correct.
And you planned at some point in the test, in the pilot, to have people who are using iPhone 6 or, you know, a smartphone equipped with a reader? Are people going to be able to use their own media to interact with the system during the pilot?
Thank you. Beyond the test pilot or beyond the project team, we don't anticipate that. We've reached out to some individuals to see if that was possible who have indicated an interest, but the follow-up hasn't occurred. We haven't received those responses back. And again, for those reasons of if a transaction doesn't work out right, which this is a test system, so we're following up on a lot of those items, relative knowledge of those personal finances, et cetera, becomes a bit problematic when we go out to the general public. So we didn't want to invade on anything like that.
Now, I'm told or I'm advised that NEEP is not currently compatible with either Google Wallet, Apple Pay, or any other NFC payment system. Is that a correct understanding? Is that a correct statement?
I would say no. During the pilot, we have initially used a smartphone, an NFC-equipped smartphone with a software called SoftCard, which was used frequently. We have over 1,000 taps or transactions utilizing that technology. And that's one of the learnings from the pilot, that SoftCard application used on the smartphone there, essentially went away on the 1st of April. It was acquired by another company, I think Google Wallet, who folded that operation into there. So that's no longer available. Actually, the Google Wallet is workable in some cases. We have used test transactions with the Apple iPhone. They currently are not quite transit ready as far as ease of use and speed of the transaction. We actually had, our integrator had the Apple technical team here just yesterday reviewing our system with their test devices, et cetera, to see see how things could be worked out in the future.
So for the pilot, what's your timing when you will be able to test Apple Pay or Google Wallet in the system? A couple months from now?
Madam Chair, committee member, we've been using those devices for transactions already. We have transactions.
But not the 400 people that are participating in the pilot.
That's correct. Just the test team. Mm-hmm. And we plan to continue with just the test team and those devices.
Thank you. Mr. Randall, I got to tell you, I'm not prepared to support going any further with this exercise of NEAP until you do a robust, and you have a robust pilot that has the large number of participants participating that had initially been envisioned for the pilot. I'm not prepared to support something based on 400 active participants, none of them using Apple Pay or Google Wallet, the kind of media which in the long term we would expect people to use to access the system. So I'm just making a statement of what my position is and my feeling about this. And, you know, I'm looking at your project timetable, and if you don't come up with another pilot in this project timetable, it makes absolutely no sense to me at all. I don't think how you could go forward into any kind of effort of phase deployment or phasing out smart trip usage until you've had a robust pilot that has the number that you originally envisioned for the pilot, with people actually being able to use an iPhone 5 with iPhone 6 with Apple Pay or another smartphone with Google Wallet, so that you really got a robust, vibrant test of how customers would be using and interacting with the system when it were implemented by the board. Thank you.
Here you.
Oh, thank you. A couple of questions. First of all, I appreciate the fact that you've indicated that WMATA will take the lead in the coordination, collaboration with the regional partners. Did I hear that correctly?
We're discussing how exactly that would look like. Mm-hmm. There is a model that was used in the past. That's not the model where this project was initially established. We're discussing what components of that prior model could be brought into this to enable everybody to move ahead.
All right. And I know, at least my jurisdiction, I think this reflects the concerns of others as well, that there needs to be a way for WMATA to revise the NEAP, however you pronounce it, contract with Accenture. Is that possible? Or is that being considered?
As we look to different ways to manage the program with the regional providers, we're looking at other options, of course. Contracts are it's put together now. If we want to do something different, that would be a discussion with ourselves and the integrator and the regional providers.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there other questions, Mr. Chair? Ms. Harns?
Ms. Harns, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to follow up a bit on the line of questioning that Mr. Goldman pursued, just so I'm clear. So Tom, you said several times that the team is the folks who are using these new methods of payment that are embedded in smartphones. And I thought I heard you say that the reason the team is the only people doing it is because of privacy issues related to the transactions if you were to give it to the public participants, that there's data that you need about how quickly the transaction happens and other things that you feel like you wouldn't have access to were you to have them use that method of payment. Did I understand correctly or not?
Thank you for the question. There's no data privacy concerns on a basic transaction.
Okay.
That's not a factor. My intent was, if this is a test system, so if issues occur, we would need to resolve those through detailed analysis of credit card statements, maybe bank accounts, something like that. And that's not somewhere we wanted to go with general public.
Okay, so it does somehow track back to this issue of you would need access to all the information from, if I were doing it on my, I just got a new credit card that's got one of these chips on it. So if I was using that and the transaction didn't go through or something became a problem, the only way you have to figure that out is to look at my credit card bill? Is that, am I understanding you right?
That would be part of the process, sir.
That would be part of the process. And you have subsequently sent emails to people or asked some of the participants whether they're willing to have that level of scrutiny should something go wrong, and you've not heard back from those folks, is that correct?
We first inquired just on the capabilities, if they had a device that would be possible, and I'm not aware that we received much of a response from that. I can follow up on that.
Okay. You know, I appreciate what Mr. Goldman is saying. I also know that we're reaching the end of the useful life on what we've got. And I don't want us to be in a position where we have nothing to replace it. Smart Trip has been, certainly from Arlington's point of view, a really great tool that has made it easy for customers to use anything that we have that's on wheels or on rails in Arlington. And we don't want to see that capacity diminished. So I do think we're going to want to understand this all a lot better, and I certainly support trying to get more people into the pilot. I think that's absolutely the right thing to do. But I feel a little bit on all this online pay stuff, like I'm watching beta and VHS play out, and I'm unclear which way. I picked wrong the last time, let me just say. So all my kids' shows are on beta. It's really difficult to get them converted. So I understand the dilemma we are in. Let me also just echo what the mayor said. Again, I think Smart Trip was just this incredibly good thing that this agency was able to shepherd for the region. And it has been a little frustrating to watch this version not play out where everybody, where our jurisdictional staff, you know, we're carrying a couple million riders a year on our ART bus, so this really matters to us. And it matters to us how we're going to pay for it, and it needs to be a knowable cost. And right now, all of these things still really seem up in the air to those of us on the Virginia side of the river. I don't know if Montgomery is feeling the same way, or, but we need to know that we are not individually negotiating. We need to know that there is a set price. We need to know these things, and it's not at the moment knowable, and that is not a good position for us to be in as we carry all these, you know, intra-jurisdictional riders that take some pressure off the system. So I just I want to echo what he said and really encourage us to find a way through this that meets the jurisdiction's goals as well as WMATA's goals. So,
appreciate that. Just a
quick follow-up question on the NFC. Mm-hmm. With the departure of SoftCard, will you still be looking for a means in which customers, perhaps after appropriate testing and technology, will have a choice of whatever device they choose and whatever bank they choose to bank with?
Madam Chair. Committee member. Yes, we'll continue to look at that. We're looking at that now.
Yeah.
I would say that the proportion of users relative to any of those technology certainly will be relatively low to start with.
Be low to start, but it may become the direction of the future. I don't want to make it a single direction that says if you want to ride Metro, you must use Apple 6 or whatever.
Yeah, we definitely hope so.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other comments? Yeah.
Madam Chair, I'd just like to mention to the committee that Mr. Randall works for Rob Troop, and Rob and I, have been meeting on a monthly basis with Mr. Randall and Accenture. We think that, I believe that at the end of the pilot, or near the end of the pilot, that we need to do an assessment. I think 5 years ago we came to the board with an outline of what this program is going to do. I think it's transitioned into possibly there's some alternatives that have developed, and some of the things that were maybe committed are not actually there. So we want to do a full assessment before we come back to you. And then come back to you, because this is a regional system. We have a working smart trip system, and we want to make sure that we have something better to give to the community. And so we want to go through that process as the pilot comes to an end.
I appreciate that comment, and you've heard the concerns that the committee has registered.
Staff
and
has the same comments on the system, and we're trying to address those.
And do I understand that when you come back to us with your assessment of the pilot, that there might be some adjustments in the schedule?
There might be, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Or the phasing of the schedule or whatever.
Right. So, yeah.
May, to follow up on Ms. Hines' comments, I would like to make a suggestion that you step up your contacts with the regional transit organizations. They are feeling quite left out in the process. And I think there may even be a letter arriving next week from the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission that they need additional information. They need to be aware of the results of this, because they are looking at systems as well. So some tender, loving care may be in need over there. Appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other comments? I want to thank the committee for their thoughtfulness in addressing this. And it does seem like there's still some work to be done, and that we're not exactly where we hoped we would be. So if there's nothing else, the committee is
adjourned.
I'm sorry.
And everybody runs away. Mayor Yule has to be back in Alexandria by 2. He's scheduled to be the chair of the Finance Committee meeting. Can we accommodate him and just drive through to Finance and then have lunch?
Oh, dear.
Can't start before 1?
Right, we said we start at 1. We can't start early. We can run
late. Right, because we...
So you can take a 5-minute break.
Or maybe a 10-minute break.
Will that work for everybody? I hate to...
Start at
1:10. Okay.
Say 1 o'clock and then maybe get 1:10.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, so the conclusion is that we're going to start the Finance Committee very shortly after 1 o'clock. And so everybody on the board, if they want lunch, you're going to have to eat fast.
Yes.
So if there's nothing else, this committee meeting is concluded.